The U.S. President Donald Trump has held tense trade talks with EU's Juncker. Ahead of Trump's meeting, the EU had readied new U.S. tariffs worth $20 billion. In this edition of the debate, we'll discuss tensions between the EU and the U.S., which is not just trade-related. After all, the U.S. president has called the European Union a foe. Well, at this point, let's talk with our correspondent, Colin Campbell, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Colin, a rather downplayed type appearance. We expected a lot more, not even a press conference on this matter or on this meeting. Tell us what came out of this meeting.
Well, there's not much that came out of the meeting, and that's because there was very short on specifics. And that's because there's so much happening in Washington right now. With the president looking at a scandal released by his former attorney talking about influencing the elections and paying off certain people before the election, there wasn't a lot coming out of that meeting because he knew that he would have to answer those questions. Or at the very least, we would see a lot of tape and a lot of recordings of reporters shouting questions at him. When it comes to trade and these other issues that are happening all around us right now, there's a huge issue when it comes to these monumental trade retaliations that may be put in place because of the president's reluctance to negotiate a more balanced trade agreement. And right now, Cecilia Malmström of the EU is looking at how the U.S. could be punished if these tariffs are still kept in place. So there's a lot going on right now, a lot of wheels in motion when it comes to the president's investigation under the special counsel, when it comes to the trade negotiations. And of course, we have the $12 billion that he plans to pay to farmers because of the trade tariffs that are affecting China, China's retaliation, which now trickles down to farmers. And now the president has to use an emergency aid package to protect these farmers, much like the Obama administration did with its TARP program and the automotive industry.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. That's the correspondent Colin Campbell talking to us there from Washington, D.C. Let's introduce the guests for this edition of the debate. We have Mike Harris, editor at Veterans Today, who joins us from Phoenix. And also we have Jeremy Levine, a professor of global issues from Fairleigh Dickinson University, who joins us from New Jersey. Gentlemen, welcome. Jeremy Levine, let me start with you. I think I'd like to start out with a tweet. Maybe that's best to set the tone for this debate. Trump's tweet, tariffs are the greatest. Either country which has treated the United States unfairly on trade negotiates a fair deal, or it gets hit with tariffs. It's as simple as that. Do you think that is the right approach that the U.S. president is using towards the EU in this case?
No, absolutely not. There are no winners when it comes to tariffs being slapped back and forth between countries in a trade war. At the end of the day, the biggest losers are going to be American consumers and American workers. At the end of the day, if you're a business, if you're Harley Davidson, for example, the trade war and the tariffs going back and forth would cost Harley Davidson an extra $2,200 to make each individual motorcycle that they make, which means they have to charge consumers an extra $2,200 to make up those costs. They're then supposed to either eat up those costs, which would be totally pointless. No business would operate that way, or they have to find ways to cut costs, and that's why they're shipping jobs overseas. Trump, you know, for an Ivy League grad, really doesn't understand globalization, does not understand international markets, has no concept of trade. I think he's trying to design his own legacy and say he did this and did that. And while he's doing that, he seems to be creating and making up problems that really don't exist, and therefore trying to come up with immature and ridiculous solutions to them. Are there things we can improve upon when it comes to trade? Sure, but not this. You can't just assume, oh, because we have trade deficits here and trade surpluses there, surpluses are good, deficits are bad. There are reasons for that. You know, it could just be the way currencies appreciate and depreciate in value. It can be maybe it's just better for the American consumer to save money and have things made offshore, because if they're made here, it'll cost us more. So there's a lot of factors to trade, and to just simplistically say, oh, we're going to slap tariffs on whoever we think is being, whoever is treating us unfairly here in the United States, it's an absurd notion. It's just an absurd economic policy that we are enacting, and we are creating a trade war and economic unrest that is not needed in the world.
Well, Mike Harris, it's very easy to have projected what Trump would want out of this meeting. And correct me if I'm wrong, but just days ago when Trump announced that it's going to exercise tariffs of up to $500 billion with China, I would guess that with the European Union, it would go after having no tariffs at all. One of the tweets also indicated that. Do you think that Trump is going to get that out of the EU?
Well, I think his goal is to try to eliminate tariffs and try to be treated fairly. You look at the situation globally with the U.S., globalization has damaged the U.S. economy. I mean, damaged it severely. And so many people, myself included, are skeptical of globalization and would like to see the economy retooled. Now, truth be told, the U.S. does not need any trading partners. We're operating at a deficit of $375 billion a year with China, $150 billion a year with the EU. We've become a net exporter of oil and gas. So really, we don't need the rest of the world. We make world-class automobiles. We make world-class everything here. We don't need them. The fact that we agree to trade with them is hopefully beneficial for the American people. But it's gone too far. Whenever Bill Clinton let China into the WTO and we implemented GATT, implemented NAFTA, we were told that these were going to be beneficial for the American worker, that we were going to get rid of the low-wage manufacturing jobs, we were going to get higher-wage knowledge-based jobs. Never happened, never materialized. It was a lie. So how do we recover from this? How do we regain our manufacturing base? How do we bring that back domestically so that our economy is stronger? One of the things that we look at is the economy is just now beginning to recover from the recession of 2007-2008. And one of the reasons that the fiscal stimulus didn't work was because the jobs weren't here. The traditional means of promoting job growth and promoting priming the economy for better performance, they don't exist here. They exist in Mexico, they exist in China, but not in the U.S. because, like I said, we exported those manufacturing jobs and they're no longer resident in the USA. About the situation today, I truly hope that the US and the EU can come to terms where that if we don't lower tariffs to zero, which would be the preferred outcome, we at least mirror or reflect what tariffs mutually are upon each other. So if they put a 10% on our automobiles, we put 10% on their automobiles. Now, believe me, I like trade. I like German cars. I like French wine. I like Italian suits and Swiss watches. So I like these things. They're good. They're natural. I'm not opposed to trade. I just want to see the U.S. worker be treated fairly and equitably for the first time in the last 30 or 40 years.
Okay. Well, Mike Harris talked there, Jeremy Levine, about how this globalization is hurting the U.S. I'm looking at a chart right now. I wish we could show it, but I'm looking at a chart right now that shows the U.S.'s share of the global economy in terms of the GDP standing at 24.32%, which brings in the U.S. at number one in terms of the money it generates at $18 trillion, with China following second, China coming in at 11.4%. So globalization hasn't been that bad for the U.S. But the approach that the U.S. is using, which is my question to you, Jeremy Levine, the approach that it's using is hurting it. Just days ago, the EU and Japan signed one of the largest bilateral trade deals, which includes 33% of the world GDP, of which the U.S. is in some way or another not going to be part of that. Is the approach that Donald Trump then using hurting America and Americans?
Yes, it is, because the world's not taking it seriously. When we pulled out of TPP because he wanted a better deal, the world told us to get lost. When he pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement and demanded a better deal, the world ignored us. He wants a better deal when it comes to the Iran nuclear program. The world has ignored us, and the world will continue to ignore us. This notion, this myth that globalization is bad for America is just wrong. The American economy has grown exponentially over the last few decades. Now, have there been people and communities that have been hurt by it? Absolutely. Have there been industries hurt by it? Absolutely. And they've definitely been left behind. And you saw that, the anger about all that, come out in the 2016 election. But instead of fighting globalization, which is not going away, it's not going to go away, instead of promising to bring back jobs that are never going to come back, the United States government, whether it's Trump or whoever's president, needs to figure out a way to bring these communities and the American people who have been left behind into the global economy. And that means participating in trade agreements with the Europeans and Japanese. That means a lot of things. You know, you can say you like German cars and French wine and this. You know, this notion, this myth that there seems to be a myth that German cars are in Germany and French wine is only made in France, when in fact, Germany made over 1 million cars in the United States alone last year that we then export to other parts of the world. And German automakers hire around 50,000 American workers to work. So this idea that, you know, American companies only hire Americans, Germans only hire Germans, it's archaic, it's old-fashioned, and it's political rhetoric that we really don't need around this time whatsoever.
But Mike Harris, can you please explain that to us then? Is that right, what our guest there said, in terms of made in Germany doesn't mean that it's all from Germany, like the labor in terms of some of the cars, depending on the brand, I would guess, is also used in the United States?
Well, the guest makes a, you know, Dr. Levine makes a very good point, and that is, yes, BMW, Mercedes have moved manufacturing facilities here to the U.S., which is to be lauded. And I appreciate that because I want to see the American working class put back to work. But right now, we still have an extremely high lack of participation in the workforce out there. I mean, we have 97 million people out there of working age who aren't working. And, you know, that's a problem. I don't care what the unemployment numbers say. The metrics were changed. If we applied the same metrics that were used when Ronald Reagan was sworn in January of 1981, our unemployment rate would be much, much higher. Now, I applaud Trump for what he's done so far, and the economy is moving in the correct direction. However, it still has further to move. And one of the things I will criticize is American companies who have offshored and closed up their manufacturing facilities here. And I'll give a couple examples. One of them is Coach Leather Products. You know, I used to buy Coach wallets and belts and other products, but I don't anymore because they used to say on the inside, made of highest quality leather in America. Today, they don't say that. They just say made of highest quality leather. The product did not become any cheaper to buy, but the quality went down, and now they're manufactured in China by $2 an hour labor, not by an American worker here. And so what's the benefit to the consumer if the prices don't fall? Now, the shareholders benefited. The CEO got his bonus, I'm sure, but the consumer didn't benefit by Coach moving their facilities overseas. And these are the type of things that I look at. Johnson Murphy Shoes, another fine example, used to be made in Tennessee, now they're made in India. If you export your manufacturing base, who is going to be left to buy your products? No one. And so what Trump is trying to do is the same model that Henry Ford followed, and that is he paid his workers a higher wage so they could afford to buy his cars. And that's what I'm saying here. It's the same model. It works. Globalization is an anathema to the American working class, and it needs to be nipped in the bud. We need to look at our own national sovereign interest. And signing agreements like the TPP would be a disaster because we relegate our sovereignty to a foreign body, which we have no control over here, and no influence as the electorate.
Well, something that has happened, Jeremy Levine, is the fact that the European Union, by getting slapped with tariffs in the form and manner that the U.S. has done, is now being somewhat pushed towards the East. And naturally, when we talk about the East in terms of the economy, that would mean China. As a matter of fact, China is seeing an opportunity over here, saying that, you know, we need to unite against the U.S. Does this, which is now in process, or will this work against the U.S. when it comes to trade, which then subsequently would mean that the U.S. is shooting itself in the foot with the approach that it's using, slapping tariffs?
Yes, because I don't see what other response should be expected from the Chinese. I mean, they're still very heavily dependent on sending exports around the world. They're an export-driven economy. Their consumer spending is not near what the U.S. and other developed countries are. So if you're going to slap tariffs on the Chinese, are they not supposed to slap tariffs back? Also, we still need the Chinese to buy much of our debt because of all the bonds we sell, so there's a risk of complicating with that. And when you've antagonized the Europeans and you've antagonized the Chinese and you continue to antagonize much of the world in a very arrogant approach to and simplistic approach to economics and global affairs in general, I don't expect the Chinese or the Europeans to react in any other way. And I have a hard problem taking Trump's economic and trade policy seriously when my two Trump ties that I own are made in China, or did own. I don't own them anymore, but they were made in China. Ivanka Trump just closed her fashion line. My mother owned some of her stuff. None of that was made here either. So I have a hard time taking seriously Trump leading this nationalistic, bring American jobs back kind of thing, when all his stuff was made overseas, his stuff still made overseas, his properties and things that he owned are still hiring immigrant workers. They're not hiring Americans. They can't find Americans to work in any of the wineries or vineyards that the Trumps own. So I have a hard time taking anything he says about trade seriously and not as a hypocrisy. And I fully expect the Chinese to react the way they are and the Europeans to react the way they are, and for the Europeans and the Chinese and other countries to sign trade agreements to kind of leave us in the dust. I don't think they take him seriously because I, as an American citizen, don't take him seriously.
Trying to understand, Mike Harris, what Donald Trump means when he has blasted the EU in more ways than one. And, of course, the most severe criticism or critique against the EU is that he doesn't hold this back, that he wants a breakup of the European Union. How does that benefit Trump when it comes to trade? We know that he wants bilateral trade done with each country, and I'm sure he doesn't have anything against EU workers as a whole or each country respectively. But to ask for the European Union to break up, or to ask, for example, when he went to UK asking Theresa May to sue the EU, what is his ultimate goal there? And of course, how should the EU react to that?
Well, there's a lot of us who are questionable about why the EU was formed in the first place. If you go back to World War II and you look at the EU, that seems to be Nazi Germany's dream, is to have a united European front there. So that's a bit of a canard. I'll grant that, but it's much more productive to have, as you said earlier, how do you get agreement among 28 or now 27 countries once the UK exit Brexit? But how do you get agreement among them individually? That's just it. You get agreement among them individually. You don't get agree. You're not going to get agreement. You're going to get a horrible compromise among them if you deal with them as a whole entity of the EU. And the U.S. has a much more favorable negotiating position if we deal with Italy as a country, or if we deal with Germany as a country, or if we deal with France as a country. We have a lot more flexibility, and we can exert a lot more leverage and get a lot better deal for the U.S. By dealing with them one-on-one versus dealing with them as a unified body that consists of the EU right now.
Okay. Well, I'd like to find out, Jeremy Levine, then, the logic behind how Trump slaps tariffs on China, China retaliates, American agriculture is targeted, and now they are suffering to the point where Trump had to allocate $14 billion to rescue them. That doesn't quite make sense. It seems counterproductive, unless I'm missing something here.
No, you're not missing something. I said the same thing. I think it's a pure reflection of his trade policies aren't working. He's just too arrogant to admit it. So he's now going to engage in, you know, more of a left-wing socialist welfare policy to help those being affected, which in the Republican Party that I'm familiar with and the right-wing politics that I'm familiar with would be unheard of. But it's arrogance because he just doesn't understand really what he's doing, especially with farmers. Of course the American worker was going to be hurt. Of course the farmers were going to be hurt. I'm sure the Chinese and the Europeans, when they slapped tariffs, it wouldn't surprise me if they said, oh, where did Trump win in certain areas? Where were those workers? Where were those farmers? I'm sure you could do that and put a lot of thought into it and make the pain feel exponentially more. So you're not missing anything, because I didn't miss anything either. And what I would respond with the European Union is Trump doesn't understand how the European Union works. You can argue the European Union has flaws, absolutely. I think with the Eurozone, with the countries in the Eurozone, I think that was integrating too far. But integrating itself has worked because it's kept the world out of war and Europe out of war for the last 70 years. But Trump's understanding of the European Union was clearly not there when he praised the Brexit vote and said Scotland voted to take their country back, when Scotland, that part of the UK, voted to stay in the EU. Scotland has historical ties to France. And there's talk about Scotland again breaking away from the UK as a result, and Trump's golf property in Scotland. If Europeans and citizens of countries who are in the EU, if the UK leaves, can't get there easily without any hassles with visas and stuff, his business would suffer as a result from people from other parts of Europe not being able to get there as easily. So he clearly shows no understanding of how the EU works. Or at the very least, which I also think, he's also serving Putin's agenda when it comes to the EU and trying to destabilize an economic bloc that Putin doesn't like, because I personally believe they colluded and that there's more that Robert Mueller's investigation will come out as well. So I do think that ties in as well to a point.
Okay. Well, Mike Harris, let me come at you with the amount of trade that transpires between the European Union and the U.S. I believe it's somewhere between $500 and $600 billion, if I'm correct, with a deficit of about $150 billion. Now, Trump tweeted before Juncker's meeting, saying that I have an idea, both the U.S. and EU, to drop all tariffs, barriers, and subsidies. That would finally be called free market and fair trade. Hope they do it. We are ready, but they won't. Why wouldn't the EU do it based on what Trump has said there in the tweet?
Well, they've got some very protectionist policies, particularly in agriculture in France. The French farmers have been very famous for this, and they're not afraid to go on strike and do a number of other things. And one other point of clarification when we talk about U.S. farmers, we're not talking about some guy out there who owns 400 acres that's been in the family for five generations anymore. That's gone. What we're talking about here is big agribusiness that own hundreds of thousands, if not millions of acres, and they're corporations. We're talking feedlot operations. We're talking big business here. We're not talking little individual farmers. So let's be clear about that and be very explicit. Now, is Trump doing things that are causing some short-term pain? Yes, he is. However, you cannot replace the supply chain. If you're buying, you know, millions of tons of soybeans from the U.S., you can't replace that supply chain overnight. And the people who are the buyers, who are the consumers in China or elsewhere around the globe, are going to feel the pain in the short term as well as the U.S. farmers are. So there's losers on both sides of this. And I would really like to see Trump be successful and get us back to a fair trade footing with other countries. The U.S. for so long has been penalized with these tariffs globally, where, you know, Korean car comes in the U.S., they pay a 2% tariff here, we pay a 25% tariff going into Korea for the same, for our cars going that way. This has got to become more balanced to where our ability to compete as a country, you know, business-wise, is not impeded by these tariffs that we bump into everywhere, and everybody's not afraid to pick on the U.S. because we're the wealthy country.
Very well.
And Trump is right.
I got to jump in and give 30 seconds. Sorry, Mike Harris.
Okay.
Jeremy Levine, 30 seconds to you. Do you think that Trump is going to come out on top along with American workers and Americans? 30 seconds.
No, not at all. In fact, I expect not only are we going to have short-term pain, but I actually do think that the economy itself is going to suffer more in the long term, and we could have a potential downturn. We're making the same mistakes with tariffs that we made in the 20s when we had a roaring economy, and we decided to pass tax reform, deregulate things, and then institute tariffs on top of it, and then we had the Great Depression, and a bunch of things happened after. The unemployment rate can't get much lower. Actually, the Federal Reserve's unemployment rate, target unemployment rate, is 5%. It can really go up from here. So doing all these things now, when things can blow up in the long run, especially with the 2020 election down the road, no, I do not have, I'm not very optimistic.
Very well, we're going to have to end it there. Thank you. Our correspondent from Washington, D.C. at the top of the hour was Colin Campbell. Mike Harris, editor at Veterans Today, thank you. And Jeremy Levine there, professor of global issues, Fairleigh Dickinson University from New Jersey. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitale and the entire team in the capital of Tehran, it's goodbye.